Welcome to this edition of Back to Basics with Pastor Brian Broderson.
Jesus, at that one point, you remember, he said, I am the way, the truth, and the life. And the reason I point this out is because, of course, we're living in a day and in a time when there is a blatant denial of the existence of truth itself. We're living in a time when people say that there is no absolute truth.
Today on Back to Basics, Pastor Brian continues his study in the Gospel of John. Join us as Pastor Brian begins his teaching on John chapter 18 in a message titled, The Arrest and Trial of Jesus. Now, here's Pastor Brian.
As we come to chapter 18 of John's Gospel, we come to the conclusion of the time that Jesus spent with his disciples in the upper room. So now, as we come to the 18th chapter, we again pick up the narrative in the sense that now things are moving again. From chapter 13, right up until this point, they have been gathered together there in that room, and all that we've read has transpired in the room. So when we come to 18 verse 1, it says, when Jesus had spoken these words, he went out with his disciples over the brook Kidron, where there was a garden, which he and his disciples entered. So we're now moving once again. And Judas, who betrayed him, also knew the place, for Jesus often met there with his disciples. Then Judas, having received a detachment of troops and officers from the chief priests and Pharisees, came there with lanterns, torches, and weapons. Jesus, therefore, knowing all things that would come upon him, went forward and said to them, "Whom are you seeking?" They answered him, "Jesus of Nazareth." Jesus said to them, "I am he." And Judas, who betrayed him, also stood with them. Now when he said to them, "I am he," they drew back and fell to the ground. Then he asked them again, "Whom are you seeking?" And they said, "Jesus of Nazareth." And Jesus answered, "I have told you that I am he. Therefore, if you seek me, let these go their way, that the saying might be fulfilled which he spoke, 'Of those whom you gave me, I have lost none.'" And so here they come to arrest the Lord. And as Jesus speaks to him, notice in italics, we have, "I am he." The italics are on the "he," meaning that the translators inserted "he." So when they came to Jesus and said, "We're looking for Jesus of Nazareth," he said simply, "I am." And it seems it's here that he's taking once again to himself, as he did earlier in this gospel, that name by which God was recognized among the Jews. And notice what happens when he says to them, "I am," power comes forth from him, and they all fall backward to the ground. So it's amazing that they continued their pursuit at this point. You would think that having had that experience, they would have maybe reconsidered what they were about to do. But they persevered, they pressed on, and they came and arrested Jesus, but he spoke on behalf of the others that they would be let go. And he said that this was that the saying might be fulfilled, "Of those whom you gave me, I have lost none." So now Simon Peter, having a sword, drew it and struck the high priest's servant and cut off his right ear. The servant's name was Malchus. And so Jesus said to Peter, "Put your sword into the sheath. Shall I not drink the cup which my Father has given me?" Of course, the disciples didn't understand. They wouldn't understand really until later. They wouldn't understand until Jesus was risen from the dead that all of these things were necessary, that all of these things were in fulfillment of what the prophets had declared, and that this cup was ultimately the cup that had been given to him by the Father, the cup referring to his coming death for the sin of the world. So then the detachment of troops and the captain and the officers of the Jews arrested Jesus and bound him, and they led him away to Annas first, for he was the father-in-law of Caiaphas, who was high priest that year. Now it was Caiaphas who had advised the Jews that it was expedient that one man should die for the people. So here again, we meet with these two men, Annas, the one who was deposed by Rome as the high priest. Caiaphas was put in his place by the Romans, but they were father-in-law and son-in-law. And as John reminds us, earlier he had recorded that Caiaphas had said to the Jewish leaders at one point, he says, you know, you guys don't know what you're doing. I mean, look what's happening. The whole world is going after him. We've got to do something about this. And then it was Caiaphas who suggested that Jesus needed to die. And better that one man die than the whole nation perish. And so with Caiaphas, he's prophesying that Jesus would die for the nation, that he would die for the sins of the people, even though, of course, he had no idea that he was actually doing that. So, verse 15, and Simon Peter followed Jesus, and so did another disciple. Now, that disciple was known to the high priest and went with Jesus into the courtyard of the high priest. So the disciple here is no doubt John. He's referring to himself, and he often refers to himself in this sort of ambiguous way. He doesn't come right out and tell us it was me, but the inferences are that it was him. And so the disciple was known to the high priest and went with Jesus into the courtyard of the high priest, but Peter stood at the door outside. Then the other disciple, who was known to the high priest, went out and spoke to her who kept the door and brought Peter in. Then the servant girl who kept the door said to Peter, "You are not also one of this man's disciples, are you?" He said, "I am not." Now the servants and officers who had made a fire of coals stood there, for it was cold, and they warmed themselves. And Peter stood with them and warmed himself. The high priest then asked Jesus about his disciples and his doctrine. So here we see Peter, as Jesus had predicted, Peter denies that he knows the Lord. He's going to do that two other times, but this is the first time that he does that. So the high priest asked Jesus about his disciples, his doctrine. Jesus answered and said, "I spoke openly to the world. I always taught in the synagogues and in the temple where the Jews always meet, and in secret I have said nothing. Why do you ask me? Ask those who have heard me what I said to them. Indeed, they know what I said." And when he had said these things, one of the officers who stood by struck Jesus with the palm of his hand, saying, "Do you answer the high priest like that?" Jesus answered him, "If I have spoken evil, bear witness of the evil. But if well, why do you strike me?" Then Annas sent him bound to Caiaphas, the high priest. So this scene here in the house of Annas, it's astounding to think, of course, that Jesus would have been treated this way, and he was struck by the officer here. And interesting also his response, "If I've spoken evil, bear witness of the evil, but if well, why do you strike me?" It was against the law to strike a prisoner or to strike a person who was in the position that Jesus was in being tried, and yet they're violating the law all the way through this thing. So Simon Peter, back to Peter again, stood and warmed himself. Therefore they said to him, "You are not also one of his disciples, are you?" He denied it and said, "I am not." One of the servants of the high priest, a relative of him whose ear Peter cut off, said, "Did I not see you in the garden with him?" Peter then denied again, and immediately a rooster crowed. So in fulfillment of what Jesus said, three times before the rooster crowed, Peter would deny him. With Peter, of course, it's easy to on the one hand to condemn him. It's a little different if we put ourselves in his shoes. But what was Peter's why did he do this? He of course, was the one who boasted, Lord, when Jesus said, tonight all of you are going to be stumbled because of me. You're going to be scattered. The prophecy of Zechariah, he referred to, would be fulfilled, that strike the shepherd and the sheep will be scattered. And you remember, Peter said, Lord, although all of these others deny you, I will never deny you. Lord, I will not only not deny you, Lord, I will die for you. And so immediately we see the source of Peter's problem was that he was self-confident, trusting in himself, trusting in the flesh, essentially. And so, because the flesh is weak, when Peter has the moment there before him to make his bold confession of his faith in Christ, he doesn't do it. He fails to do it. He denies that he knows him. He swears with an oath that he doesn't know what any of these people are talking about. A sad, sad moment indeed for Peter. And of course, the other Gospels tell us that at this point, well, Luke tells us that it was at this very moment that the eyes of Peter and the eyes of Jesus met. Oh, you can just imagine what that must have been like in the heart of Peter. His heart must have just been ripped out at that point as he was looking there right into the eyes of the Lord. And so there it was, the fulfillment of what Jesus had said would happen indeed did happen. And so in verse 28, then they led Jesus from Caiaphas to the praetorium, and it was early morning, but they themselves did not go into the praetorium lest they should be defiled, but that they might eat the Passover. So these guys, I mean, it's amazing. They don't have any problem condemning to death or seeking a death sentence for this man who's done nothing but good. He's healed the sick, cleansed the lepers, raised the dead, taking care of the poor, you know, all that Jesus did, but they're seeking the death sentence. They have no problem doing that, but at the same time, they're worried that they might somehow get defiled and not be able to observe the Passover if they go into the Roman facility there, the praetorium. So you see the absolute blindness of these men at this point, completely oblivious to the great sin that they were committing. Their hearts are so hardened. Pilate then went out to them and said, what accusation do you bring against this man? They answered and said to him, if he were not an evildoer, we would not have delivered him up to you. Then Pilate said to them, you take him and judge him according to your law. Therefore the Jews said to him, it is not lawful for us to put anyone to death, that the saying of Jesus might be fulfilled, which he spoke, signifying by what death he would die. Now, Jesus, of course, had said over and over again that he would be crucified, that the Son of Man would be betrayed into the hands of sinners. They would beat him. They would mock him. They would spit upon him. They would kill. They would crucify him. So Jesus had predicted his death by crucifixion. Now, the Jews, had they taken things into their own hands, like they did occasionally, they would have stoned Jesus. And of course, they tried to stone him. John records a couple of incidents, and the other gospel writers do as well, where they attempted to stone him, but they were unable to go through with the attempt. And of course, in the sense of God overseeing and providentially guiding these things, Jesus couldn't have been stoned. He had to be crucified. But again, it was in fulfillment of prophecy, because the Romans were the ones who crucified, not the Jews. So Pilate entered the praetorium again and said to him, are you the king of the Jews? Jesus answered him, are you speaking for yourself about this, or did others tell you this concerning me? Pilate answered, am I a Jew? Your own nation and the chief priests have delivered you to me. What have you done? Jesus answered, my kingdom is not of this world. So Pilate is asking, are you the king of the Jews? Jesus is basically affirming that here. My kingdom, yes. You want to know if I'm a king? Yes, I am a king. My kingdom, though, is not of this world. If my kingdom were of this world, my servants would fight so that I should not be delivered to the Jews. But now my kingdom is not from here. Pilate therefore said to him, are you a king then? Jesus answered, you say rightly that I am a king. You say rightly that I am a king. I think about that. My kingdom is not of this world. And you think, of course, men would think only generally speaking in terms of this world. But, you know, if you think of even this world in the greater scheme of things, we know now because of all of our scientific advancements and you know, the ability to some degree measure the size of the universe and all of that, we know, although the earth, you know, in the sense of importance is really probably the center of the universe, yet the universe is a big, big place. And there's a lot out there, not to mention the invisible realm that Jesus is referring to, the spiritual, that Jesus has dominion over. And of course, he has dominion over the earth as well. But at that point in time, he's saying, my kingdom is not of this world. It would and will be, but at that point in time, was not. But then Jesus says this to Pilate, for this cause I was born, and for this purpose I have come into the world, that I should bear witness to the truth. Everyone who is of the truth hears my voice. So Pilate's asking him these questions that are really more political in nature. You know, are you a king? And, you know, are you the king of the Jews? I want to know about this. Jesus says, yes, I am a king. But there's another issue here. The issue is truth. For this cause I was born, for this purpose I've come into the world, to testify to the truth. Now, many times over, and especially in John's gospel, John uses the term truth several times over, where the other gospel writers don't put so much of an emphasis on the particular term. But John does all the way through. Grace and truth came through Jesus Christ. Jesus said, If you continue in my word, John chapter 8, you're my disciples indeed, and you shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free. And then, of course, Jesus at that one point, you remember, he said, I am the way, the truth, and the life. So here again, things are coming back around to the truth. And the reason I point this out is because, of course, we're living in a day and in a time when there is a blatant denial of the existence of truth itself. We're living in a time when people say that there is no absolute truth. There's nothing that's ultimately, finally, and absolutely true. And of course, they're generally speaking in spiritual terms, because if you try to apply that to life in general or to reality in general, you're going to have a really difficult time functioning in this world, if you deny that there is truth. There's absolute truth about many, many things that make the world go round, that make it possible for you to get up and live your life throughout the day. And, you know, if you just disregarded the whole concept of truth, you couldn't survive a day. If we really realistically, not philosophically, but if realistically we tried to live a day in denial of the idea of truth, the whole world would self-destruct in a day. So, but here's the thing. Jesus said not only that there is truth, he said, you remember, I am the truth. He says he came to testify to the truth. So the postmodern philosopher says there's no truth. Even the existential philosophers prior to that questioned the validity of the idea of absolute truth. Jesus says, I am the truth. He says he comes to testify of the truth. So for those today who deny truth, and among those Christians who have drifted into liberal philosophical views, everybody's got to face this reality. Jesus says, I am the truth. Jesus said that he came to testify to the truth. Now, Pilate's response was this: what is truth? What is truth? Pilate was a skeptic. And unfortunately, the Jews had not done a very good job of impressing Pilate with the truth. They certainly should have, because they were to be God's nation that was set apart to testify to the truth of the one true God and so forth. But Pilate, of course, could see within the religious system, he could see the corruption. He had many severe dealings with the religious leaders of the nation. He had been reprimanded by Caesar because of a conflict that he had had with the religious leaders. He knew they were hypocrites. He knew they were politicians. He knew themselves. He knew himself that they didn't really take their religion seriously. But obviously, with Jesus, there's something different. He's not part of that group, and he's now talking about the truth. But Pilate, at this point, seems to be such a skeptic that rather than inquiring further, he just sort of is almost just given up on the possibility that there would be any truth. And so, what is truth? And when he had said this, he went out again to the Jews and said to them, I find no fault in him at all. But you have a custom that I should release someone to you at the Passover. Do you therefore want me to release to you the King of the Jews? They all cried again, saying, not this man, but Barabbas. Now Barabbas was a robber. And so we come to the end of the 18th chapter. Of course, the story continues on as we pick up in chapter 19 with the scourging of Jesus and ultimately with the crucifixion of Jesus. But as we close thinking of Pilate, here's a man who, sadly, as I said, he came face to face with the truth, but he didn't seize the opportunity to know the truth. You know, we have no guarantee that the invitation to salvation is going to keep coming our way. We need to respond. When we hear the message, when we're confronted with the truth, to, you know, in this particular case, notice he asks the question, what is truth? But instead of waiting for an answer, whether Jesus would have answered him in detail, we don't know. But instead of waiting, it seems that he doesn't believe that there is any possibility of truth. So he asks the question, but then he gets up and he walks out of the room. And, many people are similar. They think that, I'll just keep on questioning. I'll just keep going on and on in my skepticism. And, I'll discuss it and maybe, I don't know, never, maybe someday. But the point is this: we don't know that we have another opportunity. So when we're confronted with the truth, when we are there challenged by the truth, we need to respond properly to the truth. And what is the proper response? Of course, it's to receive the truth. And in the ultimate sense, it's to receive Christ, who is the embodiment of truth. So we'll end it there, and we'll come back and we'll pick up in chapter 19.
For the month of November, Back to Basics Radio is offering a book titled The Case for Christmas by Lee Strobel. Consulting experts on the Bible, archaeology, and messianic prophecy, award-winning legal journalist Lee Strobel searches out the true identity of the child in the manger. If Jesus really was God in the flesh, then there ought to be credible evidence, including eyewitness evidence. Can the biographies of Jesus be trusted? Scientific evidence. What does archaeology reveal? Profile evidence. Did Jesus fulfill the attributes of God? And finally, fingerprint evidence. Did Jesus uniquely match the identity of the Messiah? The Case for Christmas invites you to consider why Christmas matters in the first place. Somewhere beyond the traditions of the holiday lies the truth. It may be more compelling than you've realized. Weigh the facts and decide for yourself. We encourage you to call us right now at 1-800-733-6443. Or visit us online at backtobasicsradio.com to order the book, The Case for Christmas by Lee Strobel. And when you give a gift to Back to Basics, we'll send you this book as our way of saying thank you. We do appreciate your generous support of this ministry. We'd also like to remind you that all of our other resources are waiting for you at backtobasicsradio.com or by calling our request line at 1-800-733-6443. That's 1-800-733-6443. Our desire is to encourage you in your daily walk with God. We'll continue next time with more valuable insights from Pastor Brian as we study together in the Gospel of John. Back to Basics is the preaching and teaching ministry of Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa, California.